everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition. I am very pleased to introduce to you Dr. Paul DiPompo.
Hey, Pamela. It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Now, Dr. DiPompo, you have been described as a psychologist, author, speaker, researcher, and recognized as an expert in helping people learn how to be their own coaches and make lasting change. So what does that mean? How do you help people become their own coaches?
Well, when we work with people at our institute, we do it just like a good medical doctor would, in terms of we try to find out, you know, what their diagnosis is, if one exists, and what their goals are. And we first look to science to see what the research says will help get them there. But we do it in a very positive and constructive way, with the goal of having them be their own therapists and the own experts of themselves. So they'll leave with this tool belt that they can then use for years after.
Gotcha. Makes sense. You heard me say that you are an expert and have written, I think I indicated that you'd written a book about something that we very rarely talk about. Mm-hmm. And this is, along with Misa Batsuhara.
Yes.
The title of this book is The Other Woman's Affair.
Yes.
Gambling Your Heart and Reclaiming Your Life When Your Partner is Married. And
correct.
Indeed, as much as we all hear about the person who is aggrieved as a result of the other party's infidelity, we don't mm-hmm. hear about the person on the other side. And I know
yes.
you say the other woman's affair. Is it typically women who are involved in these relationships with men who are unavailable? Or mm-hmm. are there any gender distinctions?
We have interviewed many. And surprisingly, one-third of the people that responded to our study were men. And even though there's been a lot of books out there in the past about men and women being from different planets and so forth, when it came to this experience, they were from the same planet, you know, planet Earth, and their experience was very similar.
Interesting. So what do they tend to have in common, these men and women who are involved with people who are, quite frankly, not available?
Well, these people, one of the things that they have mostly in common is that, for the most part, most of them go in with extremely good intentions. So, for example, they were duped in one way or another. All of them were duped in one way or another. Mostly duped in terms of not knowing the true status of the relationship, really believing that the married partner was ready, and that if they knew about the marriage, that the marriage was done, and they were just in the process of moving out or living separately or whatever, and they were thinking that they were catching this person at a great time to be there for them and help them heal.
Interesting. And when yes. you say that the majority of these folks have been duped, it allows us, I would suggest, to have a measure of compassion for mm-hmm. that person that we typically don't have. I mean, the other woman or the other man is just a bad guy or a bad
yes.
woman. That's all there is to it. But
right. For those old school people out there, like you think of like Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction, some crazy woman,
right.
you know, who's going to like burn your rabbit or something like that. But that's not what we found is the case. Think about people that would subject themselves to this. They're typically overcaring, overkind, and passionate. You know, but you take those same qualities, and at the other end of the spectrum, they could end up being pushovers and being highly emotional at the same time.
So when I'm saying specifically married, is there
yes.
a difference between the person who's having an affair with someone who's married versus someone who's unmarried, but perhaps in a long-term living together or not relationship? Is there a difference in the connection?
We haven't seen that in our study. Part of the criteria for the men and women that we spoke to, they had to be with someone who is either married or in a domestic partnership.
Okay.
So we had, so we didn't really distinct between the two because the way relationships are so modern today and, you know, can always be labeled married or unmarried. And so that was the criteria. So we looked at people that that were in long-term relationships with their partner, and their partner was either married to someone or in a long-term living together committed relationship.
Okay.
And that the other person was the married person was not aware of what the person was doing. So there was a secrecy.
The unmarried person or the married person?
The let's just call her the other woman. It could be the other woman or man.
Okay.
Was a secret.
Okay.
It was a secret during this whole process. It wasn't an open relationship, and this would have been a total shock to the other person.
I gotcha. And when you say we and this study, who's we, and what were you thinking you would find when you launched this study?
We meaning myself and Misa Butsahara, which is a co-author on the book. We, at our institute, Cognitive Behavioral Therapy Institute of SoCal, and with Alliant International University, we did a study where we spoke to over 50 people for hours at length. We gave them lots of in-depth measures of mood measures and things to gauge at their attachment style and their personality, and we followed most of them through the course of a few years, and we got a picture and an understanding of what's going on with these people. And to the there were some things that happened with all participants. For example, there was some sort of childhood history where there was some problematic attachment to one of the caregivers that they had, and with them being very resilient, they developed certain rules and behaviors that would help keep them safe in that relationship. But the thing ends up being, you know, more often than not, child attachment connects over to how you attach when you're an adult. And when they meet these people, these married people, this attachment switch gets activated, and they feel like this could be something great. This could heal them. That they, everyone in one way or another said, I finally met that person that makes me feel understood, that I get that this is special. So there was some attachment switch that activated that felt like it would somehow correct things from the past. But then what happened was the penny would drop in terms of, after a certain length of time, they would find out more information of the true status of this relationship, and then they're faced with these conflicting values. It's like, many of them would say, I never thought I would even entertain being in a relationship in this situation. But at the same time, they're feeling this very intense, passionate connection to this person. So there's a big values confliction going on. So in order to accommodate that conflict, they, even though they might break up with the person at that time or take time, take space, but they ended up coming back and splicing off in one way or another the things, the data that didn't match up to them, and really just tried to focus on the relationship and trusting that it was going to get resolved in a helpful way. But then in turn, that was not possible because this is a very, very difficult relationship without even taking the personality characteristics of the other, of their married partner. So there'd be a lot of rumination, there'd be a lot of isolation, and these people end up feeling very lost to the point where they're not even honest with their therapist when they go to their therapist for fear of judgment. They don't reveal the true status of the relationship.
All right, so let me make sure I understand. Are you saying that at the point that the person discovers, we'll say the other woman, because you're right, it's easier to refer to it that way, but clearly we are talking about, could be the other woman, could be the other man. Mm-hmm. When the other woman discovers that her partner is married or otherwise engaged, that she may leave, but then she is likely to return to the relationship?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's a shock, there's an anger. It's traumatic. And most of the participants that we spoke to said they tried to pull back in one way or another, but because of what they were feeling in that connection, it became somewhat of what I termed in the book and in the research like a Ponzi love, in terms of like a Bernie Madoff situation where you've given so much and you're so passionate about what you could possibly get in the outcome that you're afraid to stop putting in for fear that you're going to wind up with nothing.
So you don't, in your view, the other woman may be thinking that she doesn't want to really walk away from her investment or waste her investment.
Yes.
You give early on in The Other Woman's Affair, you list the common reactions that someone may have who is involved with a married partner. So I'd like to go through some of those.
Sure.
Certainly anxiety is a top, I would suggest, reaction. So talk a little bit about what the anxiety is, particularly if the person doesn't know that their partner is involved with someone else. So what would they be anxious about?
Well, yes, this anxiety comes up when they know that the partner is not giving all the information.
I see.
So when they, as soon as the moment that they see that penny drops and things are not what they've seemed, the anxiety often kicks in. And anxiety for them is always connected to this future-focused catastrophe of this has to work out, you know, and they're very afraid of what would happen if after everything that I've feel and I've been sacrificing, what if it all just drops and I'm left alone? So there's a lot of anxiety of they want to be able to read the future and control the outcome.
And then you talk about depression and anger. So these three kind of sound like they're all parts of the same pie almost.
Yeah, the sadness, the depression is often tied to inferences related to I'm an idiot. How could I put myself in this situation? You know, what kind of person am I for being in this situation right now? And then the anger of the what feels like an infidelity to this person in terms of the relationship that they're still having with their married partner. They try to push that anger down a lot because they know that letting it out too much is going to sacrifice, you know, the potential outcome, and it might not be in their favor. And they're often deathly afraid to be seen as similar to the negative traits of the married partner. You know, that could be something that, in this example, we'll say he, the married man, would say, you know, you're starting to act just like my wife now when you blow up at me like this, which, of course, in most situations is going to check that person. You know, that other woman is going to check herself because that's the last thing she wants to do.
She wants to show
this person that she's not that's not the situation. That's not my advice by any means. I'm just talking about these the mindsets without getting any help and having to navigate this on your own. The woman is often tied into the conflict of being angry for what he should be doing, especially in relation to his timeline. You know, she has lots of beliefs that he should be leaving and he shouldn't be dealing with this and he should be being with her. And there's a lot of like demands that she's secretly and not so secretly putting on him that really triggers that anger.
Well, and of course, the minute the married partner accuses her of being like the wife who he is being unfaithful to, that really is a death knell, I would think, in her mind. So she's got to be super good at that point.
Which is sad, you know, because the more she acts like the good girl, the more there's no conflict for him. And that timeline of his could get stretched on and on because this is someone often who wants to avoid conflict. And at the same time, being a good girl often means that she's putting her life on hold, which really sets off a bad course for her in terms of getting more anxiety and more of that investment in him and less investment potentially in her own life outside of romantic relationships and in the kind of relationship she really desires to have.
Let's talk about Maria. You give the example early on in the book of Maria, who expected to be with the love of her life within a year, and then 3 years later, they're still together, but he's still not divorced, so they're really still not together. What happened in that situation?
In that situation, it's kind of similar to what we're saying here in terms of she thought that as long as she's being patient, the things that he reports falling in love with, her kindness, her caring, her nurturingness, as long as that she was in that role, that she was in a good place. But she ended up putting her life on hold and believing that as long as she was the patient girl, that was her best chances for her having it work out, which wasn't actually the case, because her partner was someone who did not want to upset anyone, who wanted to have good appearances everywhere, and was likely very ambivalent about what he ultimately was going to do.
So she winds up, as she is trying to help him to feel better, she's actually feeling worse and worse.
Right, and it becomes a negative cycle, because as she's feeling worse, you know, the more anxious you are, the more you're going to want to, like, either shut down or seek reassurance from him. And then after a while, you're holding back during the special times that you're together and the relationship's getting stuck that way, or you're, like, wanting to talk about the relationship all the time and not being in it. So when the other person can't just have open, transparent conversations and there's not movements along a timeline, it starts affecting that relationship as well.
I would think that the last thing the married person wants to do is to talk about the relationship.
Exactly.
Either one.
Exactly.
Either the marriage or the non-marriage.
Yes. Yes. And that person gets squeezed where they're trying to make everyone happy and just prolong everything. And that married person in that situation is often quite miserable themselves.
When the person, and you say the majority of people were not aware that their partners were otherwise occupied, when they find out, you mentioned that they may not tell their therapist. Will they tell a friend? Will they tell a family member? Or does this all seem to stay inside?
It often stays inside, where they'll test out with people, test out with their friend, test out with their family member. And then when they start getting judged or feeling like they're getting judged or disapproval, they'll not be honest with the status of the relationship and keep it a secret, which is sad.
Well, yeah, and why they wind up feeling even more alone than they were feeling, certainly during the times, because their partner, who's not available to be a partner, can only be with them but so much literal physical time.
Exactly. And then when you think about shows, you know, shows like The Bachelorette or The Bachelor, it's like these people, the contestants, they actually end up having really intense emotions towards the lead because they have no other contacts. Like, if you think about it, psychologically speaking, they're kind of shut out from real life and they're just focusing on this person. And those shows are very dramatic. And these situations can be very dramatic internally or externally because of that lack of outside support.
We're going to take a break in a moment, but when we come back, you talked about identifying the things that you like or you love about your partner and how they can work against you or the relationship and how they can also sort of be the thing that invites you into the relationship. So I'd like to pick up with that when we return.
Sounds good.
Folks, this is Pamela Brewer, and you are listening to Thoughtful Thursday here on Mind Talk, and I'm having a fascinating conversation, I think, with Dr. Paul DePompo, who, along with Misa Butsuhara, is the author of The Other Woman's Affair, Gambling Your Heart and Reclaiming Your Life When Your Partner is Married. We'll be right back. Dr. DiPompo, the things that draw you into a relationship with someone, as we said just before the break, are the things that can actually work against you. Give us an example of what kinds of things you're talking about. What are some of the personality constructs?
Yeah, let's look at it from the flip side for a minute. So we'll say in this example, the woman who is meeting this man and the things that she initially likes about him before even knowing the status or knowing deeper. Often this man is smart, he's charming, he is successful, responsible, and they often talk about how intense this initial connection was. But at the same time, anything that's intense in one way could certainly be intense in the inverse. So for example, the smart man that you loved for how smart he was eventually turns looking a bit arrogant. The charming man ends up looking quite flirtatious with others over time. The successful man is often concerned about money and status. The responsible man is also often torn when it comes to having to leave his family. The caring man, you know, might be concerned about hurting the spouse and the kids. So every good trait has its negative inverse.
So this is actually a reality that I would suggest anyone needs to be aware of with any person or with any kind of relationship. That mm-hmm. you know, what you look at first blush that seems to be delightful, there is another side. Do you think mm-hmm. you can tolerate that other side?
Absolutely. I think that goes in pretty much every case. And a lot of times we'll get people in our office that are saying, I just can't find the right person. And then you're like, well, what are you really looking for? I'm not getting that, you know, that feeling you get, you know what I mean? I'm
Absolutely.
Not getting that feeling. But I'm thinking, is that a good thing? Because if that feeling was a chemical, it would be more of a cocaine, you know? And, you know, that doesn't go very well.
No.
You know, how about a Diet Coke, you know? Like, sometimes people are afraid of a Diet Coke. But actually, you know, it could be way more healthier for you.
You make the point that as much research as you and your associate did on the other woman, the other person, mm-hmm. that again, he is so much seen as the destroyer of marriages mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. person without any moral code. Is
right.
the other man who's in the relationship, is he also seen as the marriage destroyer when it's a man who's involved with a married woman?
No, isn't that unfair? And there's a lot of women listening right now that when they've had issues with their boyfriend or their partner, how often in your dating life have you heard a man say, oh, she's just crazy. I don't know why. I mean, she just keeps calling me. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, there's apparently so many crazy women out there. Do you
it's
know what
amazing,
I mean?
It's amazing, yeah.
That's, you know what I mean? That's one hypothesis. The other hypothesis is maybe you're doing something. You know, maybe you've got an equal part in this craziness.
Just maybe.
Yeah. You're laughing? Fabulous.
So
close to home?
No. So then the woman who discovers that her partner is married.
Mm-hmm.
She's not really telling anybody because of all the reasons that we've already talked about, not the least
Absolutely.
Of which she becomes the person with no moral code, with no understanding. Mm-hmm. How could she do this to another woman is often
right.
what you hear. For
yes.
the man who discovers that his partner is married, mm-hmm. does he tell anyone?
Just his, yeah. I mean, guys will, from my experience, they will tell their buddies.
Okay.
Some of them. You know, they will, the guys that we talk to, they would tell their buddies and stuff like that. But I think because there's a stereotype of they'll get some attaboys, you know, because it's unfortunately socially okay for a guy to be a little bit more, a single guy, to be a little bit more reckless, but they pick and choose those buddies, because not the buddies with the high moral compasses, the buddies that are the fun buddy, you know, the fun friend. So, I mean, they have someone, but even in the situations that we saw, it wasn't anyone that they could really talk to about it. People, sure, some of the fun buddies could know, but no one that could really understand the pain and the anxiety that they were going through.
And then, you know, of course, it gets even more complicated, because even if it's a fun buddy, if the fun buddy knows you and your spouse, and you've now disclosed this, if you're married as well, and you've disclosed this, doesn't that get to
be a little... Pam, sorry to cut you off. I misunderstood your question. I meant like the other man. Like the other man can tell his buddy when he's dating a married woman.
I see. Yeah.
That's right. But this the married man, the man who is actually married, doesn't reveal it to anyone. He's more likely to reveal it to his therapist, but not to anyone either.
So
it's all cut off and separate and ashamed. It's actually a good sign if he is. It's one of our good signs. If there's other people that know about you, that's a good sign.
That's a good sign in terms of the emotional health of the man or the emotional health of the relationship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we've narrowed it down to four types of men who cheat in these situations. There's the Mr. Charming, who's higher on narcissism than we all would like. There's Mr. Lonely, and often his partner is invalidating or consumed with the kids or her own self, and he just feels lonely and like he's the provider and that's it. There's Mr. Sexually Deprived, which is sex wasn't that great before the marriage, and he hasn't had that much experience, and he really feels like he's truly missing out, and he has interpersonal anxiety about that. And then there's Mr. Ready. Mr. Ready is the rarest but the best kind, which is someone who is truly aware and accepts that the marriage has lost has run its course, and that he is truly ready to take the steps to move on. So when he's letting other people know about the status of the relationship and having met you, that is a good sign that he is more towards a Mr. Ready.
And he's including you as the other woman more into his circle. You're not a secret.
Yes. Yes, that would be very ideal.
Okay.
As a good sign.
And the least likely to occur.
Yes.
Okay.
It occurs about 10% of the time. 10% of the time, it's a Mr. Ready.
Interesting.
Yes.
When you talk about the different types of men, you also talk about how that man is likely to have grown up, his belief systems, what his behaviors are like, and what is a relationship like with him. With Mr. Sexually Deprived, you say that his beliefs are complicated. How are they complicated? Why are they complicated?
Because very often, Mr. Sexually Deprived is with his partner, his married partner, because the friendship, the relationship, and the security is there. And he often comes in with, I wish the sex was there as well, or I wish my wife would do this or that. So he is coming in torn because he does have love and care for his wife, but at the same time feels gypped and hurt and feels like he has tried to explain things to his partner, his wife, and feels that he's not getting his fair share and understanding of that. So he is not likely to leave the wife because that friendship is there. But at the same time, he's torn, and instead of upping the ante with a sex therapist or, letting the wife know, it's so important that maybe this will end the marriage if you don't work on it. Instead of that, he tries to take care of business himself.
The four men that you describe, and now I'm going to focus on the three of the four, because Mr. Ready, he's kind of ready.
But yeah.
How do you know that you're in a relationship with these other men you have described? And how do you know whether it's reasonable to go or reasonable to stay? I think reasonable to go is, I was going to say that may be easier to figure out, but as I think about it, it's actually as complicated as whether or not you stay. So how does one know?
Well, generally speaking, you know, we've got to like not go off our feelings as the, say we're the other woman here. We can't go off our feelings to know whether we should stay or not stay. Like, we can't stay because I just love him a lot, you know, or just because I don't think I'll find someone with all those great qualities. That cannot be a reason to stay, because that's like, it could be a piece of information, but it's not data that is going to be healthy for you. So if we're talking about good signs here, we're talking about someone who is emotionally and physically taking steps to actually separate. Like, there's a timeline, and you're aware of the timeline, and you're seeing the steps. And his friends, his family, his married partner, they would not be surprised by a divorce. You know, there's at least a good friend of his that you know. You're in his future plans. There's no ambiguity about that. And there's actually a mutual respect between the two of you. So when you're talking and it's open and it's transparent, that he understands your side too. It's not all about him. He's not expecting you to be the good girl or the caring one in that role. You're both caring and sensitive to what this is like for each of you. And you both take responsibility for where you are. So she would take responsibility at the fact that she is actually making a choice to stay in and that she could leave at any time. And he's taking responsibility for the fact that he wasn't completely honest and that he really does need to do big behaviors to show his commitment. And by big behaviors, we mean being transparent, letting him see texts to his wife, like showing her proof and information that he's actually taking steps. If these other three guys are not doing that whatsoever, then you could assume that they're consumed with their stuff and you're not a big enough piece of their world.
I note that you specify that one of the things that he could do to advance the transparency is to allow the other woman to see the texts between he and his wife.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, if he's truly saying that he's ready and he's done, then there should be some information that communicates that. Like, how do they communicate? Is it just coordinating the children? You know, or does there's you know, signs of a true emotional relationship still occurring?
So if you're with a guy and let's say his timeline for divorce is, I don't know, it's imminent, it's going to happen any day now, and you discover that the papers are still in his briefcase, mm-hmm, that's not a mm-hmm. good thing.
Right. And the funny thing about the married person in this situation, you ever notice they could tell you when it's too soon, but they can't tell you when it would be too long. So you have to come up with what that too long is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, okay, you're going to do it any day now. When would you say would be too long? When do you think you would have really start to actually avoid it? When would that be? That person will usually come up with a shorter timeline than you would. Or by the end of the week, or by the end of the month, or as soon as the kids go to college in September. You know, whenever that is. And there has to be steps.
I'm thinking about those situations where someone says, I love you, but I can't leave because my wife is dying. I have to wait until she dies. Or I can't leave until my children are out of high school and now they're in the seventh grade. Is it reasonable for you to hang in there with that? Is it impacted upon by your own tolerance level, by perhaps your own emotional health, as to whether or not you would stay or go in those situations?
Right. I mean, I think you would want to get some validity on those situations. I think if the wife is dying and this is truly a Mr. Ready and maybe this person has been, you know, in the caretaking role for 10 years and, you know, perhaps with some proof and understanding and transparency, right? Perhaps that would work for you. But this whole idea of like having to wait years for the kid to be in college, I mean, research shows, which is often a big reason they'll say, but you know, research shows kids respond to divorce just as well as the parents do. So it could be just as unhealthy for a child to be in a loveless relationship than it is for a healthy divorce. So I wouldn't really use that as a reason. You know, where do you fit in this person's priorities and value system? You know, Go ahead.
What would you say is the quality of the self-esteem for the woman who is chronically in relationships with married men?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In those situations, I feel like the longer it goes on, well, let's just say in this one relationship in particular, there's two factors that are going to contribute to how good or bad the self-esteem gets. And one is how long they're staying in this relationship under these circumstances. And the second is the degree of which they're putting their life on hold for it. Self-esteem will go up, be healed and repaired when she, for example, does two tracks, a two-track plan. One track would be developing a timeline, not that she asks him for, but developing her own timeline for how long she feels it is healthy for her to be in it. And this timeline should probably be the same as she would give to her best friend that she cared about and loved. This timeline shouldn't be a timeline of what you can handle. It should be what you should handle. And on the second track, her life should be taken off hold, and she should be having a plan to improve herself and her life, regardless of whether this works out. And this would be someone dealing with this with eyes open, moving forward. So whether the relationship works out or not, she still feels like she's moved forward and she's okay.
How often in the relationships that actually work out for the other woman, such that she and her gentleman are now together, he is divorced or fully extricated from the other relationship, how often does she start to wonder if he's going to do to her what he did to his wife?
Right, exactly. There is, like I mentioned before, a 10% chance that this relationship is going to work out without the book. And we've given this book to, we're doing some research on giving this book to the participants that we had and other people that are in this relationship and assessing how this might influence like the outcomes of it. But that being said, you're right. In order to build trust, this is very hard to build trust when this whole relationship started as being duped. So there are signs that this person can do to show that they have actually turned a corner and they can be trusted, which is, like I had mentioned, really the transparency and making sure that there's someone who is not and refuses to avoid conflict. Someone who is comfortable, or even if they're not comfortable, willing to talk about the hard things. So take steps showing that they're leaving. This is someone who's open and transparent about difficult conversations and really showing their commitment with big behaviors, like I talked about. If they're doing that, this is somebody who is married, but on an emotional level, no longer married and ready. If they're not doing these things, this is a sign that they're not ready, and it's very likely to be repeated if there hasn't been the ability to be open and transparent and have the difficult talks.
All right.
You know,
we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to focus more specifically on the healing steps. I mean, you talk about developing a list of pros and cons and other things like that. So I'd like to start there when we come back from this brief break. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk, and we're talking about the other woman's survival. We'll be right back. DePompo, talk about mm-hmm. the if this, then what exercise. What's that about?
Our book helps the reader get in touch with the rules that they live by that they're not even consciously aware of, because those rules that we live by connect to not only how we feel, but the strategies and the things that we do, you know, in response to it. So, for example, let's just say time and time again, the man in the situation pushes out the timeline and is not being transparent. And she's catching him in some mistruths. And this woman is like, I don't know why I keep accepting this crap. So then in one of the exercises in the book, we would have her fill in some of these blanks. So, for example, if I take this, then, and we try to get her to, like, Mad Libs, try to get her to just, like, answer what goes through her mind. She might say, if I take this, then we're still connected and it won't be all for nothing. And I'll feel more hope. And then we look at the inverse, because if I didn't just take this, it would be over. And then fill in the blank. It would all be for nothing. And I'd feel, and then she fills in, what's the emotion?
And then on
horrified, depressed, or yeah.
Right. On the other hand, if I continue to take this, I'm going to continue to get this.
Right. And if I set a limit, then there's possibility for change and I'll feel more confident. So we help them identify the rule in their head that's keeping them stuck and help them to construct a more truthful, healthy, adaptive rule that's going to really connect to more assertion and more goal-focused behavior.
You've literally talked to the reader of the other woman's affair and asked them to create a pros and cons list. How is that different from a if this then what list?
The pros and cons list for whether to stay in or go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Well, this isn't really the pros and cons list. Isn't really looking for underlying beliefs as the rules are and so forth. But what happens is when people are emotional, they'll focus on the extremes of one side of the pros and cons. So, for example, when you're missing him, you're going to be like, but I don't feel like this with anyone else. And then when you're mad at him, I should go, I shouldn't take this. So it's human nature, just like with a breakup. If we've all done that, you tend to like wax and wane. And this pros and cons exercise really helps you just to focus on the facts. And we have pros for staying, pros for going, pros for not staying, pros for not going, looking at all sides of the coin. And then you exhaust your brain filling out each category and weight on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is this to you, each item? Because a lot of times if you don't weight them and put them on a scale of 1 to 10 of how important it is to you, people mess with their own brains and wind up with equal on each side. And they're like, oh my gosh, I'm more confused now. But it's important to weight them because you might have a lot of things that are not that important and a couple of things that are really important. And I'm not saying that this other should make a decision based off just the facts alone. Sure, emotion has something to do with it, but it's a very important piece of information to know factually what is in your best interest.
And that is an interesting distinction that you've made, because, again, so many times people will focus on, but I love him or I love her, mm-hmm. and allow the other realities to kind of go out of the window. I've been loving him mm-hmm. for 10 years, and I'm still living here and he's still living there is part of the reality of that,
mm-hmm.
or at least it could be. What mm-hmm. does the other person, the friend of the other woman, if in fact the other woman discloses, what would you like the friend or the family member to actually say other than, oh my goodness, how could you? Which is not really
right.
Useful.
Absolutely, because if that happened, if that was a situation, what happens is she usually backs down and minimizes it and feels shame. So I feel like the friend would definitely want to come in with a mindset that is accepting and understanding, you know, like the worldview that we do things for good reasons. Generally, we're good people. So if this is her friend, why not come in from the standpoint is my friend must be doing this for some good reason, which I believe is true. And then get curious with her and try to investigate with her whether she should hold him or fold him using the principles, you know, that I identify in the book and the things that we're talking about today is look, is there enough facts that it's worth the risk? Because of course it's not an ideal situation, but it'd be worse to shame her or to not help her because then you're going to lose the opportunity to support and be there for her and it's going to make it worse.
There are certainly, I can't speak to the percentage of women, but there are certainly a fair number of women who will specifically say, there's nobody out there, there are not enough men, I don't mind, I'm just going to date married men because that's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Where's their self-esteem? Where's their self-concept? Should we be angry with them?
No, those were the other women in the study that were also duped, but in a different way. There was a small percentage of women that had that mindset, and we traced it back down to still a child history of some sort of difficult attachment to caregivers and her developing these rules that she believes that this keeps her safe. You know, that there's a, you know, an end point to it. But what we found in these situations was that because of the dynamic between the two of them, she duped herself because more often than not, they actually end up falling for this person and get sucked into the same situation that they never thought they would. So this person is someone who, in theory, is literally talking a tough game, but really just trying to keep herself safe and from being too vulnerable. And she slips and it doesn't work.
Is she likely to report to, if she's seeing a therapist, to her therapist what her perceived chosen relationship lifestyle is? Is she likely to say to her therapist, I'm only going to date married men and that's just where I am?
Not likely, because all the women that we've had in our study have said that they had not been in an ongoing therapy relationship where they had that attitude. So perhaps this is people who either don't seek out therapy or have tried to touch on that with their therapist only to be met with criticism and judgment. Because when you're in therapy with your therapist, therapists have to realize that clients will look at your facial expression, what you're saying and not saying, your eyes. They're looking at you more than you realize for signs of acceptance and approval. So if you as a therapist are not truly coming from a place of my client is well-intended, regardless of what their behavior is, you're going to be sending signals out that likely are not going to let them be open and honest.
So for the clinicians who are listening, if this is really something that you cannot personally deal with, or at least mm-hmm. work to understand, maybe this is a client that you should not take into your practice.
And it's hard to know because they're not going to tell you on the phone call, likely, you know, on the initial phone call. But then again, it's like, and that makes sense and everything. But at the same time, I would encourage therapists from this standpoint to assess what sort of beliefs they have, you know, about it and really try to challenge some of those beliefs. Because if you think about it, up to 40% of marriages have infidelity. And in the country, that leaves, you know, like, millions and millions of others. You know, I think that's about maybe 16 million people at one point or another are going to be an other in the country. So we're talking about a decent population size that is isolating and ignored. So therapists out there have definitely had clients in this situation. They just didn't know.
Gotcha. Let's say that we have, all things being equal, a best case scenario. Mm-hmm. He's left his wife. He's now with the other woman. They're married. They're struggling some, but they're trying to work it out. Would you recommend premarital counseling? I know I just said this couple, this mythical couple is married, but would you routinely recommend premarital or marital counseling when it's an other woman situation that is now a wife or a live-in partner situation?
Oh, absolutely, because very likely there are still hidden hurts and resentments, and they have to, the relationship has likely at that point been so consumed with getting to where they are now, very likely they might have lost sight of where they want to go. And it would be a good time to make sure that the trust, the communication, and the positively constructed relationship goals are put in place for the future.
You have said that the impact of an affair has been likened to that of a trauma. How is that?
It is similar to a trauma in that one analogy could be, say you have a cupboard at home, and the cupboard is packed with different items, and the door of the cabinet keeps popping open. That's what it's like for the women in this situation, where there's so much that they just don't understand and they're trying to slice it off and it just doesn't make sense. Like, how can this smart, charming, responsible man, you know, be hurting me so much? Or how could we be so good but still in this situation? So they end up having to slice off pieces about this person and pieces about their relationship that don't really match up to the way they see him. So what happens is it takes a lot of energy to keep that door shut, closed, when the memories and the understandings aren't quite at peace. So what therapy could do for these people is help to better understand and organize the items in their mental cupboard so they could close that door easily and it's not going to bust open on them. And if they want to open that door and look back at it, they can, but it can close shut nicely. So what I mean by that is basically having to really understand what happened, understand the full effect of it, and feel like, okay, we can close that file and we can move forward. Because some people in this situation, more often than not, feel like they have to keep the file open and be on alert all the time for a potential, you know, infidelity or a mistrust or something like that.
And that can be certainly exhausting.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And that's what a trauma is like, being on constant alert and not being able to just file that incident in the past as something that is different from now. They can't differentiate the trauma from the safety of the current state.
Was there anything in the study that you and your associate were particularly surprised to learn?
Yeah, there was actually two things. One, the degree to which the women were actually duped and were engaging in that Ponzi love where they were just so afraid to just stop the giving and just waiting for those returns to come in. That was one thing that we were surprised about. And the second thing was the role that anxiety played, because these people were so invested in it having to work out that they engaged in a lot of maladaptive coping to achieve this secure attachment, and it became like a vicious response cycle that actually maintained their anxiety. As soon as they felt the potential loss of this romantic attachment figure, they used avoidance and other defense mechanisms that would break them down, and they were constantly on alert. So they'd either suck it up and implode internally or anxiously act it out with him, having lots of conversations, drinking, using cannabis, or just using other things to just try and cope because the anxiety was so bad.
One of the, I think, the greatest eye-openers for most readers of The Other Woman's Affair is, as you say, the fact that most people really don't know from the outset. And I think that's going to take society kind of time to sort of wrap their brains around that, because society, by and large, has, I would suggest, always operated under the notion that not only does this wicked woman know, but this wicked woman is wicked, immoral, knows, and doesn't care. And you're right. Saying the exact reverse. She's like you and me. She didn't know. All she did was love.
Right. And of course she had a choice at that point to leave. But it is just incredibly hard because it's like a feeling like no other. She had already sacrificed her values and morals, and she believes that if it does work out, then it was meant to be, and he really was always going to leave. So better me than some other new person. So it's just a really tough situation that if you were never in it, you might never quite understand what it's like.
Absolutely. The Other Woman's Affair by Dr. Paul DePompo. Dr. DePompo, thank you so much, not only
thank
for
you.
The book, but for joining us today on Mind Talk.
Thank you so much. Check me out on Twitter, Dr. Paul DePompo, and you'll definitely get more information on what we're talking about today and other relationship tips.
Terrific. And would you just spell your name very quickly so they can get the correct Twitter address?
Sure. It's Dr. for the doctor, PaulDePompo. P-O-M-P-O, Dr. Paul DePompo.
Terrific. Thank you very much again, Dr. DePompo. And folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is available to you on demand 24/7 simply by going to myndtalk.org. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. If you'd like to be in touch with me directly, you can send me an email to Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. Again, that is myndtalk.org. And folks, remember, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. You take care.